This Coin Week podcast is brought to you by PCGS, the standard in the rare coin grading industry. To learn more, visit www.pcgs.com. In this episode of the Coin Week podcast, we talk to early copper collector Al Boca, whose impressive collection of 1794 cent varieties was offered for sale at the Long Beach show by Heritage Auctions. Al talks to us about how he got his start in the hobby and why the 1794 cent holds such a special place in his heart. Hi, Al. Thanks for joining us on the Coin Week podcast, and congratulations on the recent sale of your impressive 1794 cent collection.
Thank you, Charles. It was a pleasure collecting them over the years.
So, what drew you to the 1794 cent?
I got into large cents when I was very young, living in Trenton, New Jersey. I had an Uncle Harry who lived downtown by the Battle Monument, which is a monument erected to honor George Washington, you know, the crossing of the Delaware, Christmas Eve, 1776. And anyhow, my Uncle Harry lived in this very old house. I had been collecting Lincoln pennies, and I had quite a collection of them at the time in the Whitman boards. And one day, my mom took me over to see Uncle Harry, and we were talking about my pennies. He said, "Oh, Alan, let me show you something." And he took me downstairs into the basement, and he had down there a cigar box full of, he opened it up, and it was full of these large sets. I'd never even seen or heard of a large set before. I thought, wow, these are neat. And it was completely full. He had found them in the rafters of the basement. Well, he didn't give me one. I left there with a desire to have one. But, you know, Uncle Harry being what he was, he didn't give me one to egg me on. So, that went dormant. And then years later, I was in the Air Force stationed in Europe, and I was, happened to be in Amsterdam, Holland, walking down the street, and, went by a coin shop. And in the shop window were some, you know, some coins, and there was a U.S. large cent there. So I walked in, and I talked to the owner. Wound up buying it, I think it was for $5. It was a late date large cent. I forget the date. I don't have it any longer, but that kind of got me hooked again. So I set out to form what they call a date set, a complete run of everything from 1793, the first year they were minted, up through 1857. The final year they were minted, when the mint came out with the Flying Eagle set. So over the years, I had varying degrees of enthusiasm over this and very limited budget. So, but slowly but surely, I got to the point where I had almost all the years in a row, except for a couple of the tough ones, which were 1793, of course, 1809, 1806, and 1811, they were the four I didn't have. Well, I eventually got those, and I said, okay, well, now that I'm here, what do I do? Well, there are also, in given years, there are different types. For example, in 93, you've got, you know, the Liberty cap, and you have the wreath set, and you also have the chain set. So you have to have one of each of those, and so on. Well, so I eventually, you know, got all of those, and I had the complete run of all the different possible types of large cents. Then I worked on upgrading them. I started looking for better and better grades until I got to the point where I had a pretty nice collection. Around the year 2000, I started becoming more interested in the 1794. I don't exactly recall what prompted me to that, except the fact that it is probably the most interesting year in all of U.S. numismatics, given that it has 58 distinct varieties that are collectible and another 11 that were deemed uncollectible by Dr. Sheldon. Okay, so I said, this will be quite a challenge. Let me see how many of these 58 I can get. So I began working on that. And there again, as I got closer and closer to, and they're a lot harder to get than just a mere date set, by the way, as you can imagine. As I got closer and closer to my my goal of 58, it became more and more difficult. The most difficult, of course, being the S37, the Steigerwald variety. And, you know, the S30, there are some that are R5, R5 plus, R6 that are deemed collectible. Well, I wound up getting all 58 of them. And then I began working on upgrading the grades on them. And, you know, over a course of about, I'd say 10 years, that was my sole objective. And I eventually got to the point where I had the collection, which was just sold last Thursday. Now, why did I sell it? Well, I guess my main reason is that once the chase, I realized I couldn't go any farther without, you know, serious expenditures, very serious. And, you know, the coins that I could have gotten to upgrade certain ones were very elusive. They didn't come up very often. Anyhow, I got to the point of stagnation. I wasn't going anywhere. And once the chase ended, I can't say my interest ended because I'm still very interested in them. It's just my enthusiasm kind of died off a little bit. And coupled with the fact that my twin boys, I have two boys, that just graduated with high honors from high school, and they're actually headed off to college. One is in Berkeley, the other University of Rochester. And I said, what better occasion, what better justification for giving up this collection so that others can enjoy the coins and become their custodians as I was. And at the same time, you know, coming up with some money to use for the education and also to, you know, to continue collecting. So that's where I'm at.
And what did you think of the prices realized? It seems that many of the coins brought strong prices considering where the market has been in the past 2 years.
Out of all 58 varieties, I was very happy. There were about 8 or 9 that I either broke even on or lost a little money. But most of them I sold at a profit, you know, very significant, actually. So I'm very pleased with the prices, and I was very pleased with the treatment I got from the auction company. Heritage did me a great, by the way, I mentioned my date set. The date sure. set, I sold that through Heritage back in 2011 when I said, this is it. I'm going exclusively to fill up these holes, not holes, but upgrades for my 94. So I got rid of all my date set. And that was sold at a sale in September of 2011 it was at Long Beach also. And from that point on, all I had were 94s and a few Colonials. I got, you know, I have an interest in Colonial coins, you know, Continental Dollars and Jersey Cappers and things of that nature. But, yeah, so I this is where I'm at today. And I intend to keep collecting 1794s, but not at that level. I would like to find, you know, nice, very nice specimens of the, not the very rare ones, but, you know, the R2, R3, even a few R4s, and just put together another small set just to keep me active. Now, one thing I do enjoy, and one of the main reasons I really love 94s is their history. I don't know of any other coins in the U.S., maybe even in the world, that have traceable pedigrees as do the 1794 large sets. I mean, my S72, for example, the exact head of 95, was traced back to Dr. Maris, you know, back in the 1860s. And most of the coins that were in my sale had traceable pedigrees back, you know, to the early 20th century, late 19th century. And to be able to hold in your hand a magnificent work of art, which is what a large cent is, really, Liberty Cap cents, that was held by some of the, you know, the luminaries of large stamp collecting, and you know, Lauren Parmalee, you know, Dr. French, the Chapman brothers, you know, you name it. I've had the list of pedigrees persons on, in if you went through my entire collection, it's extensive. Just about everybody: Sheldon, Nestor, Dan Holmes, Howard Newcomb.
So, Al, what were a few of your favorite pieces in your 1794 set?
Well, Charles, as you know, the year 1794, when they were making these pennies, these large cents, every die was hand-cut. It was cut by a little engraver guy sitting with these spectacles, and he would input each and every letter, each number. Everything was done by hand. So a die, either obverse or reverse, was a one-of-a-kind item. Now, the process for annealing and strengthening the steel was not up to par. And the dies wouldn't last, sometimes they wouldn't last very long. They would crack and become unusable. So that would require changing either, you know, whichever die it was to crack, the obverse or the reverse. Now, every time one of the dies was changed, that would constitute a new variety. That's how we wound up with 58 varieties. And so my favorite coins, the first favorite that comes to mind is the S18B. It's the coin that I commissioned a painting of at one time. It's just the most beautiful head of 1793. In other words, it's the Liberty Cap that most closely looks like the Liberty Cap of 1793. And it's, in many opinions, it's about the second or third finest known. I was reluctant to sell that, and right now I'm in the process of trying to get it back. But that would be one of my favorites. The color is magnificent. It's got a pedigree that is quite impressive. That's one of probably my all-time favorite.
And that coin was owned by a number of prominent collectors, including Virgil Brand and Dennis Loring. I think Anthony Terranova once owned that coin.
Yes. Yes, indeed. Yeah. And like I said, it's a gorgeous coin. Well, you can see in the catalog. I mean, just perfect color, perfect cut, well centered, and just very little rub. Very little rub. I would, you know, it's actually, in my opinion, it's about a 55 coin, AU-55. Okay, now, my second favorite coin, if I have to choose only five, is the S20. The S20 is the third finest known of what is referred to sometimes as the straight date variety. It used to be known as the Hayes 1, and in fact, when it was sold in the Ebenezer Gilbert collection by Thomas Elder in 1910, in that catalog, it was lot number one. It's also plated in that catalog. That has the most magnificent color, and like I say, it's the BF25, just gorgeous coin, and the straight date, and again, as with the 18B, it's a head of 93. Heads of 93 are by far my favorite overall, and they're the favorites of quite a few of the 94 collectors because they are deemed to be you know, more beautiful, more graceful than what comes after, the head of 94 and then eventually the head of 95.
So a collector has not seen more than one or two 1794 cents, and maybe even one's not nice enough to distinguish much of the design. What is the difference in the appearance of the 1793 and 1794 head?
Well, the 93 head is narrower. I mean, if you look at the profile, it's like it's less, there's less width to it. It's just a more graceful looking coin. The heads and the 90, head of 94s, they seem to be broader, wider, larger. These are more delicate. more, I don't quite know how to describe it, but if you look at them side by side, you'll see what I mean. In fact, I flipped the page over just now looking at comparing the S20 with the S22 just a couple lots later. And it's clear the difference in the profiles.
And the locks of hair are much different as well.
Yeah, the locks of hair. In fact, I did an interesting study once, isolating only the locks of hair. I had images of all the major varieties, all the major obverse varieties, and I cut out the cut and pasted just from the ear back and the hair locks, and I put them on a display. In fact, if you'd like, I could email you the images or mail them to you, but it's quite interesting when you put them side by side. There's such a difference from one variety to the other. I mean, no two are alike. Think about it. You're cutting, the engraver was cutting hair locks just to fill in that space. I mean, there was no die punch. It was all done by hand, crafted. So they're all different. All the little hairs are different.
So we know that these coins were cut by hand and the technology was relatively primitive. But it's amazing to think about how these coins compare to the much more sophisticated coins being struck at the same time in Europe.
Well, yeah, I mean, when they were made, at that time, they were the state-of-the-art of engraving and minting in England was superior. I mean, they had, you know, the Condor tokens. They if you look at those, I mean, they're crisp and clear and shiny and everything. And the large sense are very crude. I mean, I guess things are pretty crude in the beginning years of our mint in Philadelphia. Okay, but my next favorite coin has got to be the S35. This is the prime example of why there are so many varieties. As I said earlier, the dyes were not that strong. The annealing process was not that good. And the dyes would tend to crack as they were used in the press. And this particular variety, the S35, the die cracked magnificently, as you can see, from about 12:30 o'clock down to 6 o'clock. It's just a really great die crack, and it's very obvious when you have the coin in your hands. Just gorgeous. Plus, this is a CC1 of that variety, and also the advanced die state, which makes it extremely interesting.
I guess that people who collect modern U.S. coins may not realize that for this early classic period, the more weird stuff going on with the dies, the more interesting the coins have become for collectors.
Well, for the collectors today, yeah. I mean, we love that. Die crack cuds, you know, die cracks and various other mistakes. You know, these coins had lettered edges. Around the edge of these coins were the words 100 for a dollar. And in many cases, the machine that they did it with the Kestang machine, would slip. So you have a lot of errors even on the edges of these coins, which is interesting. So, you know, as a 1794 collector, you've got the obverse to look at, you've got the reverse to admire, and you also have the edges to look at to give you, interesting perspectives. Now, the next interesting coin, I think, one of my very favorites is known as the split pole variety. It's the S66. Once again, it's ahead of 94, and it's a tail end of the heads of 94, and after that they went on to what's known as the head of 95. But the S66 split pole variety, this is the finest known. It's a very tough coin to find. It's R5. And it's got a pedigree going back to Ebenezer Gilbert again. And it's just a magnificent, gorgeous, flawless, smooth coin. And the pole from the point of the neck to the edge of the coin, there's a die crack that occurred there that makes it look like the pole is a V-shaped, sort of. But it's really not part of the pole. The pole is intact. It's just a crack that developed in that particular area. Anyhow, this is a very sought-after variety and hard to find. let alone in CC1, it's a top condition. There again, that's another coin I'd really, really like to get back. I didn't own it long enough. I wish I had it back.
For someone looking to get into early coppers, what advice would you give them?
The first advice I give them is to join the Early American Coppers Club. And you can find out about that by going to their website, eacs.org. And I joined 40 years ago. And, you know, before that, I really didn't know anything at all about coppers. They published a quarterly magazine called Pennywise, which is nice glossy pages, color photos, and articles by all the collectors. And you cannot afford to not be an EAC person. And also, read the book. Like with any coin, you know, read the book before you buy the coin. And I would also recommend strongly get to know other collectors and try to pick up on some of their knowledge when it comes to grading, you know, what to look for, what to look not to get, you know. And I mean, I could, you know, I've helped a couple of people along the way in the last couple of years. I've been working with a really good friend of mine from New Jersey, and I've helped him evolve into the point where he's got either the third or fourth finest collection of them right now. And he just got seven of them out of my sale. Very, very soon, by the way, Charles, my website, I'm going to update the provenance section of the website, and all of these coins will be updated to show their selling price, and when I know it, who purchased them, who won them at the auction. And as, you know, as more and more people come forth saying, oh, Al, yeah, I got, you know, this or that coin, then I keep updating the provenance section as I go along.
So, Al, did you prefer your early coppers to be encapsulated or in the raw?
Oh, no. I really don't like the encapsulation. I like most all copper people like to hold the coin in their hand. You have to brush it every, you know, carefully every few months. You take them out, you look at them, you brush them, and they're like our little children. I, over all the years, when I turned my collection over to Heritage, not a one of them was encapsulated, and yet most of them, when I got them, were. First thing I would do when I got home was break them out of the plastic and give them a nice brushing, put them in a nice cotton old-time pouch into their respective envelope and into my coin box, so that I could take them out every now and then and look at them, feel them, you know. Yeah, it's strange. But, you know, I also think that when I got these back, I looked at them in the plastic, you know, PCGS plastic, and I'm telling you, I swear, they seemed like they looked better than before. I don't know why. Maybe it was mental. But I'm looking at them and think, wait a minute, are these my coins? They look gorgeous, even better than before. So, I'm not sure the answer to that question is. You know, I may start leaving them in the plastic, but I think they need to breathe too. So,
well, I will say one thing. I think Phil Arnold at PCGS did a fantastic job photographing some of your coins. They are by far the finest illustrations that I've ever seen of many of these coins.
Oh, Heritage has did a fantastic job. I'm so happy with the photography they did and the catalog itself. You know, I think. Deserving of what is the highest literary award there is?
Well, there is the Numismatic Literary Guild Award for Best Catalog.
I think Mark Borchardt should be commended. Mark Borchardt, the cataloger at Heritage, did a fantastic job. I mean, this guy puts his heart into it. And I'm telling you, it was his idea, for example, for me to put a comment about each coin. He said, how about a commentary? And I said, oh, okay. And once I started, it became very easy.
So, Al, your main set is now sold. Are you going to continue to collect early coppers?
Well, I've still got to recover. I'm get my feet land on the ground here. But 94.
So, Al, thanks for taking the time to join us on the Coin Week podcast and discussing your incredible set. We wish you the best of luck in your future collecting and hope to talk to you soon.
Thanks, Charles. It was a pleasure.
If you enjoyed this podcast, please share it with your friends. You can also download more than 40 Coin Week podcasts for free from the iTunes Store. For Coin Week, I'm Editor Charles Morgan, signing off. Until next time, happy collecting.